Okay, so we are holding on some tests on the days, four lines from the bottom. We started talking yesterday about the case where a person sells a field and says, I'm excluding, we had a couple of different cases where he explicitly writes that I'm including the trees, or he says, I'm selling you the land plus some trees, or I'm selling you the land without the trees, or various other, the last thing we had actually was he said, all except for a certain palm tree. So we said it depends. If it's a good quality palm tree, it means he only wanted to reserve that one for himself. If it was a bad one that doesn't even produce very much fruit, then it means he means basically all the palm trees, all the ones that are that quality or better, because obviously then he wants to keep more for himself. So now continuing on that topic. What happens now? A person sells a field and says, I'm selling it except for the trees. Now, the key thing to realize is like this. Tree is a very generic, Elon in Hebrew, tree in English, is a very generic word. Most kinds of trees can just be called by the generic word Elon. But then you have certain kinds of trees that, because of their importance, have a special name.
Okay.
For example, Dickley, which are palm trees, Gufni, which are grapevines.
Why is Dickley so important?
In those days, in Bavel, that was the one of the main crops that they had.
I think it was the only sweet thing they had.
That may well be, actually. But there's a Gemara in Ksubas, anyway, that says there's a number of advantages to dates. They're filling. They warm you up. They help. The Gemara mentions like five different things, and actually. Who says we don't? I mean, we in New York, you try to grow a palm tree, it won't grow. But they grow plenty of them in California.
We try every year. I don't know why.
Okay. There's plenty of them grow. Plenty of them grow in Israel and Lahaville and California and Florida and whatever. Anyway, I should also mention. There's a Gemara in Psachim that says also in Taimis that says why did the Eibishter choose Bavel as the main place for the Jewish people to be in their first stage of Golos? Is because palm trees grow plentifully over there, and that way they'd be able to eat dates, which are a cheap, nutritious food, and have lots of time for learning Torah. They wouldn't have to spend a lot of time on making parnassus. So we see the importance of dates.
I have questions why we are here in America.
Okay, anyway, onward. Okay, onward. The point is, therefore, that if you say trees, what kinds of trees does it include? So, if the field has trees in it, okay, then it means Lavame Ilani, fine, very simple. Then it means he's selling the field exclusive of the trees. Isle Dickley, what if the field doesn't have regular trees, but it has palm trees? Okay, it means Lavame Dickley, fine. Of necessity, you have to say that when he said Elon, even though it's true, palm trees have a more specific name. They're called a deco, but that's what we're going to get to if he has both. Right now, we're just dealing with the basic concepts first. So if all it has is palm trees, okay, of necessity, we have to say that when he says exclusive of the trees, he means palm trees by that, even though he didn't specify what type of tree. And the same thing, if the field only contains grapevines, same idea. When he says exclusive of the trees, of necessity, we have to reinterpret and say that when he says trees, he meant grapevines.
Grapevines are not trees, by the way.
They are. You say I ate some fruit of them. They're trees.
In the Gemara, I guess, they're different.
They have hard...
grapes, you say birds for the eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the definition goes by how it grows, not by whether it's a tree or not. If it grows...
Yeah, but it has to for it to be a tree, and as far as the dinim of brachas, it has to have a hard, woody stem.
A hard, woody stem.
Has to be that the stem and the branches last from one year to the next, which grapevines...
So
the only difference is grapevines, the branches themselves are weak. You have to hold them up with sticks or whatever, like we said yesterday, but still, they are... They are basically a type of tree. No, I haven't yet. Okay.
A watermelon
is a vine.
It's a dama, though.
Yeah, it is a dama. Yeah. Because
there's no trunk.
There's no trunk, and the stalks regrow from one year to the next. I don't get. Yeah. Okay. Iloni the Gufni. Now, what about? Let's consider. Suppose, like you said, what if the field contains regular trees as well as grapevines? When he says, "I'm selling you the field minus the trees," what does he mean to exclude? It means the Vame Iloni. It means he means to exclude the other trees, but not the grapevines. Given that grapevines have a certain chashivus of their own, and they're not called in common parlance, they're not just called trees stam. They're called grapevines. They're called Gufni. Then when he said Iloni, he must have meant only the other trees, the apple trees, the orange trees, or whatever, but not the grapevines. Otherwise, he would have been expected to say
grapevines and dates.
That's what we're going to get to. Wait. Iloni v'dikli, similarly, if it has other kinds of trees as well as palm trees, same thing. Levame Iloni, then it means he means to exclude the other trees that he's reserving them for himself, but not the date palms, because otherwise he should have said so. What about gufni v'dikli? Now comes the question, what if the field contains both grapevines and palm trees? Which one is left out when he says levame Iloni? It means levame gufni. It means he wants to exclude the grapevines. So why is that? Because the Rashbam starts by explaining his preferred explanation is because among the two of them, between grapevines and date palms, grapevines are closer to being called Ilonis than Dikli. Dikli palm trees are like a category of their own, even more so than grapevines. So if you have a choice, which one is going to be excluded, the grapevines or the date palms, you should assume that it is the grapevines, that those are included in the word Ilanus, that those are included in the word Ilanus, and therefore excluded from the sale. Then the Rashbam says that maybe neither one is called an Ilan, but just he wants to keep the better thing for himself, the grapevines. The Rashbam says, I don't like that explanation. However, that explanation is found by a number of Rishonim, the Rimi Gash, and a number of others do take that explanation. The Rambam actually says another thing about it. He says that the reason why he also says that you meant to keep the grapevine, but what does that mean? Is it because he holds like that shita of the Rimi Gash that grapevines are better than palm trees, and therefore you want to keep them for yourself, or better, more kosher, or yeah, whatever, or more expensive, maybe whatever, or is it a couple of them before Shemam that I'm talk about? Maybe it's because Moshe buying Yofa Moshe. Maybe it has to do with the concept that we've been talking off and on throughout the paragraph that when you sell generously, and therefore okay, maybe the date palms are more important. Therefore, you're including those and excluding the less important grapevines. So maybe if I can, maybe.
And why would the date ones be?
You could look at it that in a way, maybe dates, for the reasons that we just said, are more important, maybe than grapevines even. So that could be also the idea behind the Rambam Svara. Omer Rav, Kol She'olam Lo B'Chevel. Now this continues Rav though. This that we're saying, that we said that if you said Levame Iloni, so we're saying which trees are being excluded, the rule only applies to trees that are a certain minimum size. So it only applies if you have it, specifically when it comes to palm trees, which palm trees, you know, they're very tall, but you have to climb up in order to pick the fruit. And you can't climb up the branches. You know, it's not like with most trees, we have branches growing out at different levels, and therefore you can just climb up that way. A palm tree, you don't have that. Therefore, kol she'olam lo b'chevel ha'bishir. So if you have a palm tree, which is tall enough that you have to climb up with a rope in order to pick the fruit, then that's a shiur. Then when you say, if you said levami, you said levami iloni, then it means that you're excluding those palm trees that are that tall. But if it's not so tall that you need a rope in order to climb up it, if it's still short enough that you're able to pick the fruit standing on the ground or maybe on a ladder or something, whatever, then it's not called a shiur. Even though you said I'm leaving out the trees, such things cannot be considered trees yet. They're not mature enough to be considered trees, to be considered ilonis yet.
And therefore?
Therefore, even if you said I'm selling exclusive of the trees, those wouldn't be excluded. Those would be included, the young palm trees that are not, because they're not considered to be trees yet. That's right.
And you only exclude the trees, not what's not trees.
Yes. Yeah. However, the Dayone Goyla Amri, however, the Dayonim of the Goyla, in a generic sense means Babel, in a specific sense, the Gemara uses it in a couple of places to mean Naudar or Pompidisa or whatever. Here, the Rashbam says, brings from a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that Dayone Goyla, hello, means specifically Shmuel and Karna. So they're arguing with Rav. So Rav had said that the rule is it depends whether the tree is tall enough that you need a rope to climb it up. Dayone Goyla, Shmuel and Karna are saying, Kol she'ol kov she lo habishir. No, the rule is different. Any tree which the yoke would bend it, is not considered left out. Again, meaning, in other words, even if you said I'm leaving out the trees, you wouldn't mean those aren't large enough to be considered trees yet. What does it mean that the yoke bends it? Yeah. So the Rashbam explains like this. They used to plow around the trees, as we've learned before, in order to aerate the roots or whatever it is. They would use oxen. They would use oxen that are yoked to a plow. When you're passing by near such a tree with the yoke on the oxen, if the tree is thin enough, if the tree is skinny enough, then What'll happen is you'll go by with the yoke, and it'll bend the tree out of the way and still be able to go on. It won't, the yoke won't get stopped by the tree, so that you'd have to go around it. So if it's that skinny, the tree, that can happen, that the yoke can just keep on going, then such a thing is not considered a tree. And even though you said I'm leaving out the Ilonis, those aren't considered Ilonis.
That is dependent on the weight of the oxen.
They had a standard size yoke. We're talking about the yoke. We're not talking about the oxen. The Rimi Gash actually has a different explanation of it. He says that it means if the tree is shorter than the yoke. The yoke is, let's say, a standard, I don't know, 4 feet, let's say, off the ground or something. If the tree is shorter than that, so the yoke just passes over it, then that's considered not a mature tree yet. Whereas if the yoke does not bend it or does not pass over it, as the case may be, then it is shear. Then when you said I'm leaving out the trees from the sail, those can be considered trees. Now, the Rashbam does point out, if the only kind of trees in the field are these young or small or skinny or whatever trees, fine. Just like we said before, that the word trees has to include something, so therefore, of necessity, it may have to include grapevines, even though normally it wouldn't. It may have to include palm trees, even though it wouldn't. Fine. If all the trees in the field are little young trees like that, okay, then you have no choice but to say that all of them are excluded. But if you have some normal size ones, as well as these little bonsai trees or whatever, then we would say those little ones are not excluded and the large ones are. Veloitli, and in fact the Gemara says actually Rav and the Dayone Gola are not really arguing. Habadikli, Habayiloni, because what Rav is talking about palm trees. Palm trees, again, because you don't have branches growing out at all different levels. Once it gets beyond a certain height, you need a rope to climb up to it. No other tree is like that you need ropes, no matter how old they are. As opposed to the Dayone Gola are talking about other kinds of trees.
What does that have to do with the rope and the yoke?
No, so you have two different things. When it comes to a palm tree, then we use Rav's thing, which is if the tree is tall enough that you need a rope to climb up to it, then it's considered an actual tree. And if not, then not. And with other kinds of trees, you go according to the yoke. They're just talking about different kinds of trees.
In this case, we use the rope.
Why can't you use the rope?
For example, apple trees or whatever, you don't need a rope. You never need a rope to climb up to them. You can always climb up by going from one branch to another.
Apple trees sometimes are very big.
Yeah, but they still have branches growing low down.
What?
If it's a young sapling, it will.
Apple trees have very deep roots. A palm tree, even if it's old enough that you have to climb up with a string, it's still bending down.
Yeah, that's true. The Rashbam, you're right, thank you. The Rashbam points out, you can't use the Dayone Gola standard for palm trees, because palm trees, even when they're old sometimes, even when they're tall enough that you need a rope to climb up to them, they still may be skinny enough that they will bend that the yoke will bend them out of the way. So therefore you do actually need a different standard for palm trees. Thank you. Okay. Onward. Okay, so now Rav Acha Bahuna asks Rav Sheshes as follows. We learned in the Mishnah, again, that you have, when you sell a field, certain kinds of trees are excluded, always, even if you said Huvah Hamash B'Seichai. Namely, we said B'Chorov Hamurkov, you have a carob tree that has had branches grafted onto it, and you have a Sadana Shikma, you have a sycamore tree, or whatever kind of tree it is, where the branches have been chopped off so that the trunk will get thicker and be more suitable for beans.
And that makes it more chashuv.
That makes it more chashuv, and therefore it's considered like a separate field, right. What about, suppose when a person is selling a field, he says, chutz mechoruv plani, chutz misadan plani. What if he says explicitly, so I have a bunch of choruv trees or a bunch of shikma trees in the field, but I'm saying I'm selling you the whole field except for this particular choruv or except for this particular sadan. Mahu. Do we say, do we say then that in that case it means that the other guy is not going to be kind of that particular choruv, but he will be kind of all the other ones by implication? You would think, maybe, but maybe not. Or maybe not. Maybe you could argue, maybe the guy is not kind of any of the chorobim.
What? All the other ones too, because it's chorob pluni.
Because the fact of the matter is, we say that the chorobim are not included. So if he's mentioning this particular one, so the Rashbam explains like this, you could argue like this. He might be mentioning this particular one for one of two reasons. We had the machlokas before, Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. We're going to have it again in the Mishnah tomorrow, that we have the machlokas Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, the concept of mocha ba'ayin yofa mocha or mocha ba'ayin ra mocha, which comes up, therefore. So if you have, you sold, for example, a field, but you still kept a tree in the middle of it or whatever it is, do you now have to go and buy a path to be from the new owner of the field to be able to get to that tree? Or is it when you reserve yourself that tree, automatically a path is reserved as well?
According to Rabbi Akiva,
the path is not reserved, mocha ba'ayin yofa mocha. According to the Rabbanan, a path is reserved, mocha ba'ayin ra mocha. Well then, according to Rabbi Akiva, by mentioning this particular tree, you may be trying to say is, I'm reserving that I'm going to keep a path to it. If I hadn't mentioned it, I would still be keeping the tree anyway, because the chor of Amurkav is not included, like we said before. But by mentioning it specifically, I'm implying that I'm reserving not only the tree itself, which I would have anyway, but also the path.
According to Rabbi Akiva.
According to the Rabbanan, you have a path anyway. According to the Rabbanan, you might be doing it for shufra of the shtara, as we talked about yesterday. Sometimes you write things in the shtar which are not strictly needed, but in order to avoid any possible misunderstandings or error or whatever, in case the person himself wants to start raising objections or whatever. Yeah, so like this, you forestall it by mentioning that tree specifically, but not to say that you would be necessarily saying that all the other trees are included. So what's it in? Amalai Loikana. Okay, so Rav Sheshes answers him, you're right. In fact, the other guy is not kind of the other trees. Even though he mentions one specific one, we can assume he mentioned it for the reasons that we just said. Not because he means to say, I want only that one, but I'm selling you all the other ones. If he meant to sell all the other ones, he would have had to mention them separately in the shtag. Okay.
Each one separately?
Or just say generically, I'm selling you all of the carob trees in the field, regardless whether they're grafted or not, except for this particular one.
Yes, by mentioning it.
If he wants to keep this particular one, he'd have to mention it, sure.
You have to add on whether they're grafted or not.
No, I guess not. He could just say, I'm selling you all the grafted ones. Yeah, I mean, the ungrafted ones are sold anyway. Okay.
Can't he just say, I'm selling you all the grafted?
Maybe. I don't know.
So how does it is that he's saying, I'm selling you everything except this grafted carob tree?
But by saying, except for this grafted carob tree, he's not saying it as if to say, only this one, but I'm selling
that's
you all the other ones. That's the
Havat
Mina. But we're saying that, no, the answer is Loikana, that we're saying that he's not selling any of them. He mentioned this particular one. It's either because he wants to reserve a path to it or because Shrufer the Shtara.
Okay. But number the trees and say,
yeah,
you know.
Because you could do whatever you want. Yeah.
Trees, number one. No, but if he mentions all the others, nothing, then he does sell the other carob trees.
No, if I care to. If he mentions nothing, he doesn't sell any of the grafted carob trees.
No, the non-grafted carob
trees. Oh, the non-grafted. We're talking about the grafted.
We're never talking about the
No, we're not talking about the non-grafted ones. Those are included with the
field.
So
he mentioned one name.
One grafted one. One name
grafted.
And there were other
grafted ones.
Right.
And those ones he didn't sell.
So no, we're saying that, right, he didn't sell any of those, but only that particular one has he mentioned for an order for a path or shofar d'shtara. Yeah.
Oh, All the
non-grafted ones are sold anyway.
Ones are always sold,
yeah.
Unless he would mention
it. Unless he would specifically say it. Right.
I'm
yeah.
selling everything except the non-grafted.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Ace, the Gemara says, okay, so so Rav Acha bar Huna brings him a contradiction. A Braisa says, if a person sells the field and he says, chut michoruf ploini, chut misadim ploini, if he says, I'm selling you the field except for this particular choru grafted, that is, or except for this particular sadim, this particular sycamore tree that's had its branches cut, loikana. So the Braisa says he wasn't koine. My love, now shouldn't we assume the Braisa means oise chorov or delaikona or sha chorov and kona? Presumably the Braisa means he wasn't koine that particular one, which he specified, but he is koine all the other ones by implication. The answer is no. Amalei, no. Loi, I feel the sha chorov and nami leikona. No, the Braisa means that he's not koine any of the other ones. Keda, and in fact, Rav Sheshes continues, I can prove to you that he's not actually koine any of the other ones. Suppose let's take a different scenario. Forget about trees. A person says, I'm selling you my field, I'm selling you this particular field, except for such and such a field. So he says, I'm selling you this field, except but not this field. So what would you say? What are you gonna say? He's excluding this field, but he's including this one and this one and this one? Obviously not. He's still only selling this field. Elo loikona. Obviously, the guy's not coming to any of the other fields, and therefore we have to say that what is he saying over here? Why is he mentioning the other field? Sam, he's talking shtus, let's say. Okay, you know, not always as a
field. That he would have an easement. And also, you could say.
Yeah, but if he's selling one particular field, then you if he's saying I'm selling you this field but not this field, that has nothing. No, that's fakir. It means you have. It doesn't mean you have no rights on this one, but you have rights of easements or whatever on this one. You would have to specify that.
Right.
No, but it automatically means I'm selling you only this one. Why did he mention this one? Sometimes people talk extra. People sometimes say meaningless things.
Very weird.
Elo loikani. Obviously, the guy's not going to any other field except for the particular one. Hachinami loikani. The same thing over here. You could argue just because he mentioned one particular tree doesn't mean that it comes to include in the sale any of the other ones.
That exclude
it would exclude the other ones as well. Okay. It is, however, the Rashbam brings a girsa, but he says he doesn't like it. But most other Rishonim do have this girsa that instead of this last thing, elo loikana hochinami loikana, rather they have elo ladomi hochinami ladomi. Meaning, and with that, there's actually a bunch of different explanations among the Rishonim what exactly it means. Literally, it means elo ladomi. No, rather, it must mean as far as the value. Hachinami ladomi. So also here, it must mean as far as the value. So what does it mean? There's a couple of different explanations what it means. One is that it may mean, he is Taka saying, for example, that, let's say, for example, he mentions exclusive of this tree. Not necessarily should we assume that he means I want to keep that particular tree. The fact is he's keeping that anyway. What he may mean is that tree takes up an area, let's say, of 10 square feet in the field, the trunk of it. I'm reserving myself that I want to keep a 10 square foot area someplace in the field that I'm reserving to myself, the same area as this tree takes up. And the same thing if the person mentioned the other field. We shouldn't assume that he means, we shouldn't completely assume that what he said is completely meaningless. We should assume what it means is, in other words, this field that I'm selling you is supposed to be 1,000 square feet. This other one that I mentioned that I'm excluding is 100 square feet. Obviously, I don't mean that I'm selling you all the other ones except for that one. What I mean is I want to reserve to myself 100 square feet out of this 1,000 square foot one, so I'm selling you only 900 square feet out of it.
It's hard to assume anything like that if she doesn't clearly.
That seems like a stretch for me.
Yeah.
So let's go very much of a stretch.
Okay, so again, the Rashbam doesn't really like that explanation, but most other Rishonim do have that girsa and do explain it
really accordingly.
There are. I mean, for example, Rabbeinu Gershom has that girsa also, but he explains it yet differently. He's saying, for example, that it means that he's saying I'm selling you this field. But I'm saying chutz misode pleini, meaning, in other words, that field, if you want to buy it, I'm not giving it to you at a discount like I'm giving you this field. This field, I'm willing to sell you at a discount. That one, chutz misode pleini, if you ever want to buy that one from me, or even if you want to buy it from me now, you should know I'm going to make you pay full price for it. And the same thing maybe with the chodol. It could be the same kind of thing.
Very unreasonable.
It's not so unreasonable. And in fact, I mean, the fact of the matter
someone
is most Rishonim do understand it that way.
It's unfair. I think it's giving meaning that does not really exist.
But the fact that he says it, the fact that he said chutz michor pleini, should give us reason to
be specific. And the fact that he's not specific, he should not be better.
Well, the buyer should ask him.
What do you mean chutz michor pleini?
The
buyer has responsibilities too. Yeah. Okay. Onward. The Ikadamri, another version of this whole discussion, is Bominate of Achim and of Hunam Rav Sheshes. Another version of this whole discussion goes like this. Rav Acha Bahuna starts by asking Rav Sheshes, Chutz Michatzi Sadam Ploini Ma'ud. Let's change it up the case a little bit. Because once you can either have the whole or you can have a half. There's no sense.
Well,
we're not going to go. No, come on. Once we talk about a half can mean any fraction. Wait.
200.
Listen. The point of the question is, obviously, if you say chutz, according to this version, obviously, if you say chutz michor pleini, then there's no question. According to the second version, it does mean you're cutting all the other ones by implication. The question is, rather, if you lachatchila,
the two smart boys here are losing patience with all of us.
So, suppose that he mentions half of this particular chutz. So now you can ask the question. Mela, if he says this whole charuv, okay, it means I want to keep this whole charuv, but by implication I'm selling all the other ones. You're fine. Unlike what we said in the first lesson. But if he says half of this charuv, and the same thing would be any fraction. Come on.
This tree is not the three branches up the top here.
The same difference. That's the point is, mahu. There's no question in that case you would argue the guy is not kind of the other charuvim because
they were excluded.
No, we're saying the other charuvim is definitely not kind of for the same reason we said before. There's no reason to assume that because he mentioned half of this one that we shouldn't say by implication he sold all the other ones for the same reason we said before. Again, it may mean he wants a derech, it may mean shukr the shtar or whatever. We shouldn't assume that he means to sell all the other trees, all the other grafted charuv. So do we say then? But by
saying half of a tree excludes the other half and all the others.
Well, that's what we have to figure out. We know that it definitely does not exclude all the other ones. Meaning, in other words, all the other ones are not sold with the field. Just like this half is not sold, so are all the other ones that have not been mentioned.
Without being mentioned.
The question is, what about this particular tree itself? Do we say Hamashashir Baisekharukani? Do we say, okay, but whatever he did not mention of the other half of whatever percentage of this particular tree, maybe the guy is Kaina. Or maybe not. Maybe even he's not Kona any part of that tree.
Yeah. It's up to interpretation.
That's the Ikedam. Okay. And again, you could argue the same thing, that he may be saying, for example, I want to reserve a derech to that half a tree, for example, which actually some of the Rishonim talk about. But yes, in that case, if we say that would be the case, that he's only reserving himself half a tree and the other half belongs to the Baal HaSadeh, what it would actually mean is the Baal HaSadeh would be entitled to put a fence around the other half of the tree and prevent him from being able to go to that half. Yeah.
Looks like there's no halacha that comes down from the Shulchan Aruch on this little part here, or am I missing the gimel up there?
No, the gimel was on Loikon, Amalei Loikon.
Yeah.
What is it, Teku?
No, wait.
So we didn't get to a part.
We haven't finished yet. Wait. Okay. Omalei Loikoni. Again, he answers him that he's not. Again, he answers him that the other guy is not Kona. That the other guy is not Kona any part of that cholu. Even though he only mentioned half, he's not Kona any.
And none of the others for sure not.
Yeah. Okay. Again, Eisrei. Again, Rav Acha Bar Huna asks him, "What about a braisa that says chutz mechatzi choruv pliny, chutz mechatzi sadan pliny, shal choruv and loikana?" A braisa says that if he said except for half of such and such a carob tree or half of such and such a shikma tree, shal choruv and loikana, you're not the new buyer of the field is not kona the other choruvim. My lav shal choruv and loikana. Doesn't that mean then they're not kona the other choruvim? But implying he is Kona the other half of this Choruv. And again, according to the second version, Rav Sheshes tells him, Loi, that's not what the Braisa means. No, he wasn't Kona even what was reserved from that half of the Choruv. He's not Kona any part of that Choruv, not the half that the guy mentioned and not the other half. And again, by the same logic as before, Teda. The Ilu Omalei Sodim Chorolah Chutz Mechati Sodiploini. Again, suppose a person says, I'm selling you my field, but I'm not selling you half of this other field. Again, would he say he's not kona that half of that particular field, but he's kona the other half of it as well as any other fields? Of course not. Or forget about the other fields, but he's kona the other half of that field? Of course not. Ella loikoni, he's not kona any part of it. Hachanami loikoni, the same thing over here, you could say that he's not kona. And again, over here, you have the same difference in Girsoth, Koni, Veloy Koni versus Dup versus Ladami, or versus Ladami or not. Is he saying that I'm reserving myself half the footprint of this Chorob tree that I want to keep that to myself in this field? Not necessarily the actual Chorob tree itself, but half of the size of it, half of the footprint. Okay. Now we're going to go off topic. We're going to go to a topic which actually does not even really belong in Bava Basra, maybe in the last parak. Wow. Certainly not in this area over here. It belongs more in Bava Metzia. And in fact, with the riff, the Rif didn't when he wrote his Sefer, he didn't do like the Rambam and reorder everything into logical categories. But still, sometimes he'll take a piece of Gemara that appears in one place and quote it in a different place where it's more shaya. He quotes in Bava Metzia. What is it doing in our Gemara over here? The Rashbam says because we quoted in the sugya before what the opinion of the Dayone Gola on the size of the tree. Now in the sugya also we're going to have the opinion of Dayone Gola on something, and therefore we bring it in as well.
And it's not quoted elsewhere.
No. So again, the Rif quoted there in Bava Metzia, but it's only we have it in our Gemara over here.
Where would it go in
Bava Metzia? So the Rif quotes it, I think, at the end of the Rif quotes it, I think, at the end of the at I think at the end of the eighth parak. I'm not sure.
So something kind of recent.
It has to do with the dinim of maskid. We're going to do the dinim of Pikodon, and also we're going to see the dinim of Halva. Actually, it has to do with the dinim of Iska as well, which we dealt with Iska from the point of view of Ribis in the fifth parak of Bava Metzia. We dealt with it from the point of view of the actual obligations of the managing partner. We talked about in the ninth parak of Bava Metzia. Okay, so Bominate of Amram Menachista. Suppose somebody is maskid something by somebody else, and with a shtar, they wrote out a shtar that he was maskid by him. So you have a shtar, you have edim, the whole nine yards. And what's the good of the shtar is the Rashbam says later on the shomer will not be able to claim l'hoyer dvorim ma'olam. You never deposited anything by me. He'll still have the ability, as we will see in the Gemara, he still has the ability to claim I returned it, and he has the ability also to claim nansu that there was an onus. We'll see. We'll work that through in the Gemara over here, but at least it saves you from having to deal with a claim of lahori dvar ma'olam, of him being kofar hakol. Okay. So v'amalei hechzarti lach. Later on, at some later point, the shomer says to him, "I return the thing to you." Mahu. So what's the din? Now the point is that Rashbam says we know we learned earlier in our masechta you give a pikadon to somebody even with edim, he's not obligated to return it with edim. The question, though, is here where there's a shtar. On the one hand, you could argue that we can believe him that I returned it. He says migui. He could have said nansu. And nansu, you would believe him. Because, you have a shtar. No. Okay, it's not like the shtar magically disappears once there's an onus. Do we say that, or do we say that not? Do we say that it's sort of like a migui b'mekayim edin? Because
Nansu,
you have
give me a scenario of nansu.
What do you mean nansu? What are all the scenarios we had in Bava Metzia? That armed bandit stole it, or you know, they keeled over and died one day, whatever, you know, any case of oinus. Okay. Mahu, miyaminin migridi boyom and nansu meheman, hashtana meheman. So do we say, well, he has a migri, he could have said nansu, and we would believe him. So now maybe also we should believe him. Or maybe not. Maybe the maskid should be able to say, look, if you really returned it, why did you leave the shtar in my hand? Why didn't you ask me to give you back the shtar so you can whip it up before you return it to me?
The maskid has the obligation to return the shtar or not?
The Nifka, the Shomer himself, should be logically asking for the shtar back in order to make sure that the maskid doesn't claim the thing from him again.
But the maskid does not have the obligation to give it back.
Not necessarily, no. But the maskid can still argue, if you really returned it, I would have expected that you should have asked me back for the shtar. The fact that you didn't suggests that you didn't return the thing. Okay, Tosfos points out it's different when it comes to a loan, by the way, because with a loan, the din is, we'll learn in the last parak of our Masechta, the loiver is obligated to pay the schar sofer for writing the shtar. So it can happen that it could happen the loiver didn't have the money, so the malva advanced him that as well. Now, after the loan is paid off, he's still holding on to the shtar because he needs evidence to be able to collect that schar sofer. But over here, that's not relevant. Over here, if the maskid is having a shtar written, it's on him to write.
Give the shtar back and write a new shtar for the amount of the
sofer money.
They could do that, but it costs money. Then you have another shtar sofer for that. So why would you bother? So okay, but over here, okay. There's also Tosfos points out there's a couple of other things involved. Also, we learned in Bava Metzia, we learned in Maskid the concept that a malva on the whole, tends to be a more honest person than the loiva. The very fact that Eishta gave him the riches to be able to lend out money to another person shows that he has a certain yashrut. So therefore, the loiva is more likely to trust him.
Said that he was a nice person.
That's another thing also. He did him a favor. Yeah. That he did him a favor and lent him money. So therefore, he's less likely to say, I won't return you the money unless you give me the shtar. None of those things apply when it comes to a masket and a shtar.
There was a machlokes amaroyim, and I don't know if I'm even right about this, whether the person has to keep this shtar or not.
Yes, we have. We'll have in the last parak of Amasechta. We'll talk about whether kosev and shover or not. When the loan is paid off, is it that a shover or receipt is written, and from now on it's the loiva's obligation to hold on to that shover, or is it that the shtar is just returned to the loiva and he rips it up? We'll deal with that in the last parak of Amasechta.
Okay.
You cannot return.
It's
just that if it's lost.
If it's lost, that's the question. Yeah, then kosev and shover or not. Right, okay.
You cannot press the loiva to return the money.
Loisiel a kenosha. If you know he doesn't have to return, you're not allowed to press it for it, but that's not what we're dealing with over here.
How would you know that?
Yeah, if you know that he can't afford it. If you know that he can't afford it, then you're not supposed to harass him for it. If you have to, take him to Basin. Okay, onward. Yeah. Okay, so that's the question. So does he have a migri? I'm saying I returned it, but I could just as well have said an ansu. Or do we say that ability to say I returned it is schlugged up by the fact that there exists a shtar? Amalei Mehaman. So Rav Chista answers, yes, we do believe him. Okay, the question is, yes, Balei Malei Shtarach B'yadei my boy. Okay, but why, Taka, can't you say Shtarach B'yadei my boy? So now, why is he repeating the question? Did he just ask the question? So a couple of different Rishonim talk about various possibilities. Tosfos understands it that originally Rav Amram thought that Rav Chista meant you believe him even without a shvur. And he asked him, if you're believing him only on the basis of a migur of Nansu, he would have to swear in the case of Nansu. Why shouldn't you make him swear in this case? And that's what he's in fact going to answer, that's what you have to do. He does have to swear. There's a couple of other explanations among Rishonim. One of them, I think the Ritva says, is just he's saying, okay, you gave me the answer. How about the reason behind it? Fine, you believe him with a migur. Taka, why? Fart, my shtar, fiyadim, my boy. Yeah. Okay. So Rav Chista answers him. Okay, look, according to your own svara, okay, but the fact of the matter is, and if he were to say nansu, then the maskid doesn't have the ability to say, okay, what about the shtar? The existence of a shtar doesn't contradict nansu. So therefore, the fact that he's able to say nansu. Regardless whether there's a shtar or not, so therefore we can believe him on that. So therefore we can believe him on this. Yeah. Amalei. So, but Rav Amram says to him, soif. Okay, but after all said and done, he amalei nansu lav shvur boy. Okay, but the fact of the matter is, and if he were to say nansu, wouldn't he need to take a shvur? Because that's what happens when you say any time a shomer claims that something happens to the kadon, you need a shvur. You need a shvur. Yes, Hachinami, shouldn't it be the same thing over here? If he wants to claim I returned it, shouldn't he have to swear a shvur? Okay, the answer is you're right. My Neman b'shvur. You're right, Rav Chista says. We don't mean Neman as we just believe in and he returned it and that's that. We will make him take a shvur. What kind of shvur, by the way? A number of Rishonim and Achronim, including the Bach and the Smeh and others, say that it would be an actual full-fledged shvur d'oraisa. On the other hand, the Shach argues with that and says, the fact of the matter is, we're only saying it, you can make him swear a Shvur D'Oraisa when he claims Nansu or whatever. You can't. How can you make him swear a full-fledged Shvur D'Oraisa when he's saying Hechzarti? After all, I mean, the other guy should, what kind of claim is the other guy making over there, that he's claiming I never received it when he So the Shach says, okay, what the Gemara means over here is that, and what the Rishonim mean when they use the term Shvur D'Oraisa, they don't mean a full-fledged Shvur D'Oraisa. It is, in fact, a Shvur D'Rabbanan, that the Shach says. It will have to be done b'nekitas chetes, though. The fact of the matter is the guy will have to hold a sacred Torah or Tefillin or what have you when he's taking the Shvur. It will be done with all the formalities. It'll be done with all the formalities of a Shvur.
Isn't that Rabbanan do that?
Usually a shvur derabanan, usually not necessarily a shvur derabanan is a lot of times is less stringent than a shvur deraisa. You don't necessarily have to hold the chayv. It can just be that you're made to swear in the name of Eibishter or whatever, or with the kinuyim or whatever. But here we go through here. The shach says it's taka only derabanan, but nevertheless we will do with all the formalities of a shvur deraisa.
And not short of deraisa, you hold the chet. That's your whole.
That would be deraisa. That would be dirt.
Holding
a safer, or tefillin, or whatever is what you do by a shvur dirt. So that's the thing. Usually you have a shvur dirt ice as in a kiddus chayfet. A shvur dirt abonon is usually only with a shame or a kinui or whatever. Here, the shach is arguing it's sort of a hybrid. The concept, the shvur itself is only the abonon. It's not a shvur dirt ice. However, it will be with all the formalities of a shvur dirt ice. Okay. Onwards. Okay, the Gemara says, Lema b'plug to dehani tanoi. Fine, should we say that this set of chissa is saying over here, this din that he's saying, that we will believe him on the taina of hechzarti with a migri, even though there's a shtar against it, although he will have to swear a shvur, should we say that this is actually the subject of the following machlokas tanoim? Now, the opinions we're going to quote over here are not actually tanoim, which leads a number of Rishonim and Achronim to question that, and therefore they have a girsa instead that leaves out the word Tani Tanoi Tanya and just lema b'plugta. Should we say that this is the subject of the following machlokes between Amaroi, the Tanya, or not the Tanya? Shtarkis hayotza al Yisayim. Suppose you have a shtarkis that's coming out against Yisayim. A shtarkis is a shtar for an iska. Shtarkis literally means a pocket shtar. So it means that a person, we talked about in Bava Metzia the concept of an iska, where one person is investing a certain amount of money with the other, and afterwards they divide the profit. We said there that now we can't have the whole thing be considered a loan, because then you have a problem of ribis with the investing partner getting any profits from it. You don't want to make it all pikadon, because then the managing partner has because then the investing partner has all of the exposure to loss. If there ends up being an onus or what have you, he loses his entire investment. All the guys do is swear that there was an onus or whatever, and that's that. But because of that, the Chachamim made a takana, we learned in Bava Metzia, that such a thing is considered palga milva or palga kodim. Half of the money is considered a milva, so he's responsible to return it no matter what happens, and that way the guy is definitely going to get that. And the other half is a pikadon, where the usual rules of pikadon apply. And he's trying to clean up over here. Now we also have the refinements of it that we talk about in Ezer Neshech, all the details of how the profits and losses have to be arranged in order to avoid issues of ribis, or that the guy has to be paid a salary, the managing partner, whatever. We're not getting into all that right now. We discussed all that in Bava Metzia. Yeah. Okay. So now you have a shtarkis which is coming out against Yisrael. So Reuven, the investor, gave money to Shimon as an iska. They wrote out a shtar. How much was done? Shimon has now died. Reuven brings out the shtar against the Yisayimim and says, I want my money back. The Yisayimim are arguing back and saying, either they're making a tainus shema, maybe our father returned it to you, or the Rashbam continues, they may even be making a tainus bari. He definitely returned it to you. Okay, so now.
So they have to prove it.
Well, so one second. So the Rashbam goes on like this. If it was a plain old milva, then there's no question that Reuven would swear would swear and be able to collect the whole thing from the assignment, because there's no valid claim with a milva except for I repaid it. And if you're going to repay it, you have to have some kind of proof. But over here, no, even if it's the assignment, the problem what the Reuven, the managing partner, the investing partner, who wants his money back, will swear a shavua and he'll be able to collect from the assignment. The problem is over here, because it's half milva and half pikadon, so therefore comes up the question: what do we do as part of it? Half of it is a pikadon, after all. What do we do as far as that part? So dayone goyla amri nishva v'goyva kuloi. So the dayone goyla, why we're bringing in this gemara over here, because the dayone goyla, Shmuel and Karna say that Reuven in that case swears and can collect all the money. The Dayone Eretz Yisrael, I mean Nishba v'Goyva Mechta. Whereas the Dayone Eretz Yisrael, which the Rashbam quotes over here from that same Gemara in Sanhedrin, means Rab Ami and Rab Asi. At the end of the first Teretz in Sanhedrin, the Gemara has a general thing over there that explains many of the expressions that you have throughout Shas Dayanei Gola, Dayanei Eretz Yisrael, Machaku Alev Ma'arava. The Gemara identifies for each one of those which Amora stands behind that expression. So over here, okay, the Dayanei Eretz Yisrael, Rav Ami and Rav Asi, they say Nishba v'Gozer Mechze. No, he can only swear and collect only half of it. Now, before we get into how the wait. We'll see what the halacha is. I mean, you can see over here the Beis by Dayan Eretz Yisrael, but wait. Okay. Before we get into how this is relevant to what Rav Chisda said before, we first have to explain the situation. We first have to explain the machlokes. Udekula alma islahu the dinahau join. Now, both the Dayan Gola and the Dayan Eretz Yisrael do both agree with the statement of the Nahardoi, the Chachamim of Nahardoi, the Amri Nahardoi, Hai Iska Palga Milu or Palga Pikot, which, as we just said from the Gemara and Bava Metzia, that they say that an Iska is half Milva and half Pikot, and half Milva so that the guy is guaranteed to get half his investment back, and half Pikot in order to avoid issues of risk. If it was all Milva, then the guy's not entitled to any return on his investment. And if it was all Pikadin, no, then he has too much exposure. Like Palva Milva, so again, we have the situation over there. You can't say that it's only that and nothing else. You still need more refinement of it, because otherwise it comes out. The guy is managing all the money, he's managing the Pikadin as a favor to the guy because he also lent him money, half Milva, and that would be a problem with Ribbit, so that's why we have to have that how you split up the profits unequally, or will you pay him a salary or whatever in order to avoid that.
But the half he's getting is the Pikadin.
Ultimately, what happens is the Reuven, the investor, is getting a return on his investment.
Right.
We say that what it is the return he's getting is from the half that's the Pikadin. Fine, I'm entitled to deposit money with you and get a return on it. I'm just not entitled to lend money to you and get a return on it. So the half of the profits that I'm getting comes from the Pikadin half. The half of the profits that you're getting comes from the Milva half. The only problem is, again, in order to avoid further problems of ribbit, you either have to make the distribution of losses and profits unequal, or you have to pay the managing partner a salary as we have the whole discussion over there, in order that then you can say he's managing the money because of that salary rather than because he was lent money.
Why the Torah accepts it a return, not a salary on a pikadon? It sounds like pretty much like ribbit. So it's not.
This whole concept of Iska is Dirabanan, because the whole issue here is Dirabanan anyway.
Yeah.
The Daraisa, as we learned over there, right. Only Ribis Ksutze is also, only where it's fixed at the time of the loan.
Yeah.
So the whole concept that there should be a problem here is only Dirabanan. Well, Hey Mamru Ve Hey Mamru, the same Rabbanan who said that it's also can also say that we can that we can work around it via the Iska then. And in later times, they developed a more elaborate Heter Iska, which you can find examples of it in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and in books on business halacha and whatever the whole elaborate thing that follows these halachas but still minimizes the investor's risk as much as possible. We talked about it there, for example, that even if there should be a loss, for example, part of the Heter Iska is that the managing partner is only going to believe that there was a loss if he had two Adim to that, so therefore it's not very likely he's going to have two Adim to that, and therefore he's going to be on the hook to pay all of it. Okay, anyway, again, that's all side issue to you. Okay. The point is this. My law, the Hakamif, given that, if we're saying that the Iska is half Milva, half Pikadin, shouldn't we say then that the machlokas between the Dayane Gola and the Dayane Eretz Yisrael is on the point that Rav Chisda said before about whether you can give the guy a migri that I paid back with the shtar against it? Namely that the one opinion, the Dayane Gola, who says that he's entitled to collect the whole thing, says that the investor, Reuven, is able to say, Shorach b'yodi my boy, if you really did pay it back, if your father paid it back, like you're claiming he did, what is the shtar still doing in my hands?
Implying
that he didn't. And therefore, that would be like Rav Chisda. So in other words, again, the half that's the milva, there's no question that he's entitled to collect, because again, even because for sure we say, Shorach b'yodi my boy. When it comes to a milva, there's no question to say that. The question is whether we say that with a pikadin. Well, the iske is half pikadin. The Dayane Goyla, who say that he can collect the whole thing, including the half of pikadin, must be that they hold like Rav Chisda. Because of the shtar, therefore, they don't have the ability to say that he paid it back. Umar Savalayamri. Whereas the Dayane Eretz Yisrael would say, we don't say that. Even though the Shtar, they still have the ability to say that he paid it back. So fine, we won't believe them on the half of Milva, but we will believe them on the half of the Kodim. So therefore, it seems that that statement of Rav Chisda is the subject of this machlokes.
How can you believe on one and not the other?
Because the fact of the matter is, a milva and a pikadon are two different things. I mean, they're separated in the iska for technical purposes, but still, the fact is, one has the din of a milva for all purposes, and the other has the din of a pikadon for all purposes.
Yeah, but if his word goes to one, it has to go to the other.
Maybe they pay back half of it. The point still remains that if the father was alive, he could have answered Hechzautiv Loch with a Migriv Nansu, but that would only work with the half of Pekodin. It doesn't work with the half of Mil. With the half of Mil, you can't say Nansu. Right. Nansu, very nice. You had an onus, tough luck, pay me back.
Right.
So it wouldn't work for that. Tosfos brings up a point, and so do a bunch of other Rishonim. What about, though, we know the general concept that whatever a person himself could have claimed, Beisdin is obligated to make a claim on behalf of the Yisraelim. Why shouldn't we claim on behalf of the Yisraelim that Nansu? Fine, the Yisraelim themselves are saying that our father returned it, whether Bori or Shema or the case may be. But why don't we, Beisdin, say, okay, but maybe Nansu, and the fact that there's a Shtar doesn't contradict that? There's a few different approaches in Rishonim.
What do you mean?
They're
going to say Nansu.
They could say.
They
could say. The Yisraelim themselves don't know. They're canon. But right. we, the Beisdin, are obligated to bring up any possible argument on their behalf that their father could have done if he was still alive.
Right.
He, when he was alive, could have said Nansu, and we would have believed him on the half of the Pekodin. Why shouldn't we make that claim on behalf of the Yisraelim? There's a couple of different possibilities. Tosfos says the reason is because onus is a very rare thing. We don't make a taina for Yisraelim of such a rare thing, of such a rare circumstance like that. When we say taina in Liyasmi, we make common claims on their behalf, not rare claims like that, but where you would expect there to be a coil.
If there was such a claim, if you made such a claim, what would happen?
Then we would have to accept it. We would say, okay, then fine. Yisraelim are not obligated to swear, so therefore that's it. You're only entitled to collect your half of milva, not your half of the kodem. Anyway, there's other explanations as well, including the Ramban says, what does he say, that if there in fact had been an onus, you would expect that the father should have told them that before he passed away. The very fact that he didn't weakens that claim.
Oh, right.
And then there's yet a third possibility. The Ravid brings up the possibility. Maybe we're not talking about here about Yisraelim Ketanim at all. Maybe we're talking about the Yisraelim themselves are adults. Fine, they don't necessarily know all of their father's business. But they're claiming, they made, like the Rashbam said, one possibility is they made a Tainus Bari. They're not saying, Shema, maybe your father paid you back. They're saying, definitely he paid you back. Well, once they do that, automatically we can't allow them to say any more Nansu. They're already saying he paid him back, so therefore they themselves have undercut their any argument.
If you don't want to say that, any other thing that would work, we say that.
Right. So if they hadn't said Hechzarti, then no. So that's the thing. Well, that's what we're figuring. That's what we're trying to figure out. They're saying Hechzarti. Do they have that migri or not? That seems to be the subject of the machlokas on what Rav Chisda says.
Why not?
Because that's what we're asking. Because on the other hand, there's a shtar against it. Shorach b'yodi ma'ibay. So the answer is no. No, you don't have to understand the machlokas that way. The kula alma is the Rav Chisda. We could say that both the Dayane Gola and the Dayane Eretz Yisrael do agree with Rav Chisda. That when there's a shtar against him, you can't give him a migur like that. The machlokas may just be like this. The Dayane Gola say that after all, if he had paid him back, if he had returned all the money, he should have told them that before he died. The fact that he didn't implies that he didn't, and therefore we can't accept that claim. Whereas the other opinion, the Yonah Eretz Yisrael, say, after all, you can say the Malachamavis was caused an onus. He died unexpectedly without being able to tell them. And mind you, the Rashba or the Ritva, I don't remember which one it is, says even if he died peacefully and is dead, still a person doesn't always expect when they're going to die. He thought he'd have more time, and in the end he didn't have enough time. So it doesn't prove anything. Sholach Rav Huna bar Ovin. Rav Huna bar Ovin. We're still figuring it out. Rav Huna bar Ovin sent a message from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel that went like this. As far as this din, a maskid to chaver b'shtar. Person is maskid by somebody else with a shtar. But omaloi hechzarti loch. And later on, the other guy claimed that I gave it back to you, which is Rav Chisda's original case. Neman, and we believe him. And he also said, he also said, a shtar kis, the shtar iska that we just described, that comes out against Yisraimim, the investor can swear and collect the whole thing, like the Dayane Gola. Question is, Tauti, you have two statements that contradict each other. If you say that you believe him in the first case, that implies that you say, even though there's a shtar against him, you can still believe him, whereas in the second case, we're saying that not. And therefore, there's no money to be reimbursed, right? You just have to swear Shavua. And in the second case, yeah. The answer is, Shiny Hossam, Dim Issa, Depare, Mei Ma'av Amar. Again, the same logic that Rav Huna Bar Oven takes the view that, like we just said, that if in fact the father had paid it back before he died, he would have expected to tell it to his children. The very fact that he didn't, we don't say this Malacham Lovas Udaanse. We say that he should have told them, and if he didn't tell them, then that's their problem. Bottom line, Omar Rava. Rava Omar. Okay. Rava says, no, the halacha is that you swear and collect only half, like the Dayanei Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, Mazutra says the halacha is like the Dayanei Gola. Now, it sounds like Mazutra and Rava are arguing. So, Amale Ravina la Mazutra. So, Ravina says to Mazutra, didn't Rava say that he swears and collects only half, only the half that's the milveh, not the half that's the bikkurin? Now, it's not to say, I mean, Mazutra is entitled to argue with Rava, but Ravina is asking him, are you in fact arguing with Rava? He says, no. Ananda dayanei gola ipcha masninim lo. No, we learn the opinions the other way around. We, in my yeshiva, we learn the other way around. The dayanei gola are the ones who say that you're entitled to collect only half, only the half of bikkurin, only the half of milveh. It's the Dayanei Eretz Yisrael who said that you collect the whole thing. So I agree with Rava. I agree with Rava, therefore, that's the only collect half. But I attribute that opinion to the Dayanei Gola.
Not to Dayanei Gola.
That's like what we
and that in
the other doc where the guy flips around whether it's Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan.
Yes.
And both of them say the same thing in the end.
Right. Yes. And we have that in a number of places in the chat. And that, in fact, is Halacha. So the managing partner is only entitled. The investing partner Reuven is only entitled to collect the half of Milva, and the other half they're claiming that their father returned. Then unless he has definitive proof otherwise, then no, he's not going to be able to collect it. Whether we can taina on behalf of them, then so both opinions are brought in Shulchan Aruch, whether we can or whether we can't, like Tosfos, because it's a rare thing, or whether conceivably we could, as long as they themselves didn't undercut it. Both opinions are brought in Shulchan Aruch.
We can or we may not.
We could or we couldn't. Yeah.